This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang, and it's the start of the morning run. And
we have on a Friday, no less, Sharad.
And, you know, we have to have Fridays because without Fridays, we wouldn't have the Saturday and Sunday weekend. Though, I must say, tomorrow is Deepavali.
It is.
And so, happy Diwali to all. Unfortunately, this
Monday's not a holiday, right, for us?
No holiday. So, I mean, that's painful.
So, yeah,
it's painful, right? It's like, and I know people will be, you know, feeling kind of like, we'll put out that why didn't we get a holiday as a result of this festive occasion? Because you need that long weekend to really have
recharge,
recharge, and you know, and have that time to be expansive and you know, have friends over. Because before you have time to even recover, it's already Monday, and how did you do that? So I'm not sure. I think more thinking needs to go into public holiday policy.
Maybe the government should look into this.
I think so. Let's ask the government to look into this. Okay. Looking into other matters, on The Breakfast Grill, we have Rick Hancock. He is the director of for Southeast Asia for Faithful and Gold, or rather Faithful and Gold. And he's going to be speaking with Ibrahim Sani. That's an interesting name, Gould, because, you know, I think of that American actor, Elliot Gould, and that was how his name was pronounced. But apparently, it's pronounced Gould.
Yeah. Isn't it, like, richly ironic that a Jewish people, well, Jewish people would have the name Gould in their names?
Well, no, it's not. Well, you know, you think of Neil Diamond.
From a wealth accumulation perspective.
You think of Neil Diamond, right? And because Diamond is a Jewish name. I think the original Yiddish name would be Feuerstein, which means firestone.
Oh, and you're so very good, Lashua. So how do you know these things, huh?
I don't know. I read, I guess, like you, and mockery. Well, like I say every time, mockery will get you nowhere. Okay,
I'm not mocking you, Sharad. I'm just asking, how do you come by these nuggets of wisdom? That
not much of wisdom, but it's
Feuerstein.
Feuerstein is.
Well, I happen to know that Forza Italia is a Ferrari call phrase, so which you probably won't know because you're not into cars.
Yeah. So if you the way you translate it, it could be Firestone.
Firestone or diamond.
And stone, of course, you would think of many people with the names like Oliver Stone.
That's right.
So that might have
Who's
some
just
Jewish ancestry.
Movie, by the way.
Oh, does he?
He has, yeah. On Edward Snowden, actually.
Oh, right. So, you know, the thing, you know, about
Oliver Stone
is that, you know, he had some real big hits in the start, and then he started getting weird. Or
he's always been weird, right? He's always been weird.
What's the one that has not Tom Hanks? Who's the other kind of
Tom Cruise? Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah,
amazing movie! I'm like shocked that Tom Cruise did not win an Oscar for that performance. Yeah.
You know, I'm always very resistant to American films about Vietnam
because they're always biased, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, it's an American story about American pain.
But and then, have you seen the Chinese, you know, these huge operatic dramas about conflict in the middle million years ago? You know Chinese movies, right?
Yeah.
Coming out of Hong Kong. They're actually quite good, but they're also very skewed in favor of China.
That may be. Right? And so I guess all these countries have that thing. But I think for Southeast Asia, inundated with an American's perspective on the Vietnam War, which hardly gives voice to the Vietnamese side and, you know, the pain of the Vietnamese people. So I think what happens to us when we have such a skewed distribution of cultural products like that. So, you know, people might come away thinking that the Vietnamese were the bad guys.
Yeah. Actually, you make a very good point because the film industry for any country is a great distributor of narrative, of culture.
Absolutely.
It's a great progenitor of soft power.
Yeah, it
for
is.
Hollywood, for Bollywood, especially for India. Amazing.
Call it soft power, call it propaganda.
I think
narratives, right? And I think that's essentially what sticks in my throat. I must say, I did watch a bit of 4th of July, started the movie.
Yeah.
And
you did not like it?
I was in tears in the first part. And I was thinking, see, the thing about me, Chuang, is I'm very sentimental. And I have all the buttons that movie producers know exist in human beings.
Yeah. And Hollywood is amazing at that, aren't they? Even with the animation, it's amazing. How did they do it?
I mean, I must say, I really hate Steven Spielberg, right? I mean, in the sense that he makes these emotionally manipulative movies, like The Color Purple. I watched, yeah. I read the novel.
Wasn't that the one
Alice
with
Walker?
Whoopi Goldberg?
Whoopi Goldberg plays, and also Oprah Winfrey's in it. She's got a small part,
but she's got
a very powerful part in that movie. I read the novel by Alice Walker. It's an extraordinarily moving but deeply political and, you know, kind of a novel. But, you know, Steven Spielberg really sanitizes it. He takes away some of the most important scenes from the novel.
Do you think
because
that,
he won't get the ratings that he needs.
Sure. Do you think that movie directors and film producers work with governments?
Well, you know, we know, of course, they have in the past, during the Cold War.
I think they're very well documented. They're very powerful influences, aren't they?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, there have been instances when movie producers were recruited by the CIA to, you know, topple government. So like, they were trying to, very famous instance where they tried to topple Sukarno, the first president of Indonesia, and they created a sex tape, really.
Really? And they created one?
Yeah, they created one with a Sukarno lookalike. Unfortunately, in Indonesia, that's played very well for the president.
And, ironically.
Yeah, so, you know, what they forgot was to consult with cultural experts to find out exactly how this would go down. So they took their American Moors.
So they took their gun and then they shot themselves in the foot.
Absolutely. And this is all well documented, by the way. This is not just a conspiracy theory. This is, in fact, true.
So, you know, like in Malaysia, we've always, you know, people in the arts and culture industry always going on and on about how there's not enough funding, you know, always curtailed and constricted. Well, maybe we should, you know, really look into this matter.
they should pitch to government doing propaganda.
Well, no, not really. I mean, it's the expansion of the Malaysian culture. And you know, Malaysia's footprint on the world map is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
We should have Malaysian movies.
Okay, so we talk about soft power for countries like China, for America,
and
the superpowers, Russia.
Yeah.
But what do you do with a small to medium-sized country? Do they need a soft power? Maybe in the region.
Well, of course you do.
Yeah,
of course,
okay.
It becomes even more important.
So who are our ambassadors? I think of Chumi and Chiki. Is it that?
That was long. Upin and Ipin, right?
Upin and Ipin.
Chumi and Chiki. It was a million years ago.
Whoopi.
You're hopeless, Sean.
Yeah, but at least, well, it's true. They were big in that time.
When
Upin and Ipin, big in Indonesia. Sheila Majid, big in Indonesia, big in Japan, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? So we've had ambassadors from Malaysia in the sense of we have individuals like Nicole David, right?
The fashion designers and sports people.
So we had
Jimmy Choo, Zhang Toy. Michelle Yeoh, of course, related to the YTL family.
Yeah, and so I think they all stand as cultural ambassadors for Malaysia, but we don't have a soft power, perhaps, policy. You know, it's not necessary, maybe, for a country of our size.
Well, perhaps it's time for the government to look into the matter.
Is that the refrain today? Is that going to be,
because politicians come on air and they always love to say this, we'll look into this matter. You know, Ibrahim had this interview a few days ago.
Yeah.
And he couldn't stop saying it. So I've decided to you know, the other word that Malaysians.
To mimic him.
We'll look into the matter. It's like a panacea for all problems.
So, Kusu Chuang, I can say it to you, mockery will get you nowhere.
You know, Malaysians also love to use the word in conjunction with.
Yeah.
Today's gala dinner in conjunction with the.
Yeah, because it sounds cool.
I despise the word. I really do, Sean.
You don't blame the word, you know.
Just blame the
usage. You know, words don't kill people, guns do.
That's true.
No, guns don't kill people.
Sticks and
people
stones.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. We're going to wind down from that. Okay. On Current Affairs, after the 8:30 news and after the Breakfast Grill, we'll be speaking about a much forgotten, almost invisible war that's being prosecuted by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia against the Yemenis and a particular faction of Yemeni society and politics. And so this is supposed to be one of those great proxy wars between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And it's happening largely without as much coverage as the other wars that we see in the region. And so today, Jason Lim speaks to Scott Lucas. He's a professor of international politics at Birmingham University, for more insights on the Yemeni conflict. In fact, we just had some really tragic news coming out of that conflict.
Sure. At the risk of sounding very ignorant and very parochial, I guess, for want of a better word, why should we care about what's happening in a small conflagration in another part of the world?
Well, okay, that's a very good question, and one that I think any journalist needs
correct,
to pose
because
themselves.
Number one
right?
rule is, why does it matter?
Okay, so what is that Malaysian angle on it? Well, one...
Well, it doesn't have to have a Malaysian angle.
Well, but
there
okay,
must be
I,
some kind
but
of relevance.
I can go through the list. I think there is a Malaysian angle. Many Malaysian students study in Yemen today. Two.
Really? What do they study?
They go for religious studies in Yemen. If you know a little bit about Yemeni history, you know that it were two countries. There was North Yemen and South Yemen.
That's right, because I used to collect stamps, and I had North Yemen stamps.
In fact, you know, if you were, you know, you're old enough, you had an international passport when you're very young.
That's right.
One of the many countries we could not go to
was Yemen. Really?
North Yemen because they were communist, right? So they were a communist country.
Well, I wasn't that old.
Because my
passport only ever said Israel.
Okay, is only ever?
Only ever.
You're not. Well, yeah, we're almost the same age.
Yeah,
right?
No, of course not. Sure, yes, you think? No.
You're only 3 years younger than me. There was China. There was People's Republic of China. There was Cuba.
It never said China.
Albania.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, when I first got my international passport, these were the countries on it. But anyway, Yemen would have been in the mix. I believe it's North Yemen. I can't remember.
In 1868, there was only 75 countries, right? So
anyway, after the reunification, I think, look, this is the other thing, right? It is, in fact, a proxy war between two regional powers, which is Saudi Arabia and Iran. And it will have larger reverberations. We've had, in small ways, this conflict unfolds. Like,
is that a proxy to something bigger?
Well, it could be, right? So any kind of regional conflict like this, now fought over Yemeni bodies, could explode into a wider conflict. We already have so many conflicts in the Middle East, but this could be yet another powder keg. And it's also, I think, very telling about the world community and how it... in response to things, like one of the big issues was, you know, the killing of children in this conflict in Yemen led to a UN agency criticizing Saudi Arabia. And then there was all this talk that Saudi Arabia was going to pull out money from funding or defund some of these UN agencies. And so you have this kind of thing happening all the time. Of course, you know, it's still contained. But yeah, I think there are larger lessons to learn from what's happening there, and we should keep an eye on it.
I'm sure we'll learn something new from this conversation.
And, you know, we talk about historical heritage. Remember Palmyra, the destruction of Palmyra, you know, kind of anguished the world media. They gave so much coverage to that. This was in Syria, and or was it in Iraq? And but ISIS came and they killed the chief archaeologist. Remember, they beheaded him and they did kinds of nasties. Palmyra,
the old. No, the only Palmyra I know is the condo down in Bangsa or something. Sorry.
Well, you have it. Don't worry. You know, every day is an opportunity to learn, expand our minds and knowledge.
Learning.
But anyway, the Bamiyan Buddhas. Remember the Afghan, those two big statues that were bombed by the Taliban? Remember that one?
No.
That got the whole entire world community up in arms about heritage and such. No?
No.
Okay.
No,
well, you should read, I tell you what, amazing narrative.
My problem is I only read the Financial Times. That's my problem.
Well, you can expand your horizons.
I know.
Read Peter Frankel Pan's book, The Silk Road.
You know, every morning when we want to get at 6:15 in the morning, you always tell me to read a new book. And if I were to give you a dollar...
For every time I would be able to buy a Ramly burger somewhere.
No, you can't.
You
would buy some gourmet burger.
Not even the pork version.
Yeah.
I saw
that story. How ridiculous. Sorry. I shouldn't, right?
Well, you know, look, honestly.
It's nomenclature. That's all it is.
People will say words are, you know, some people say words aren't important, and some people say words and names are important, and we probably agree to both depending on.
My
disposition on a particular story.
You know, given the extent of one crime here and one crime there, and the extent of the crimes on either way and the repercussions. Sorry, it's just a storm in a teacup.
It is. I mean, we have so many storms in teacups, and it might build up to something bigger.
Let's hope it doesn't, though.
Well, let's hope it doesn't. So many more stories in the news, including the fact that France has rejected proposals to lower taxes on palm oil that just came
well,
in.
Well, I tell you what I saw overnight from the World Business Report. It was actually something from Wolonia, which I think you also brought up with the Belgian.
Yeah, and the Canadian.
Correct.
So in the Canadian European trade. Well, this is not cultural. This is your world of business. So Canada, Pierre Trudeau's son. What's his name?
Trudeau Jr.
Trudeau Jr., terrible. And they call us journalists. Okay, so the Canadian Prime Minister was supposed to be in Europe to sign off on that trade deal. It was
vetoed by Wallonia, wasn't it?
It was, but they seem to have come. The Federation government of Belgium, the federal government of Belgium has brokered a deal. Now, there's still things to be ratified, as it were, by the various assemblies, including the province of Wallonia, and looks like the deal is going to go through, and this is said to be very good for both Canada and the European Union. Whether Trudeau will actually come to Europe to sign that, we don't know. He was meant to, and then when the thing was called off or deferred, he cancelled his plans. But anyway, international trade is under attack also by a lot of localist agendas, asking the very important questions: how does this benefit us? Is globalization really going to benefit us? Well, we'll come back with more news after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run, and that was Move Over by Janis Joplin. I love it that we really go back to the 60s. Isn't that a song from the 60s,
There's
Tim?
Another song called Move Closer by a lady named Phyllis Nelson. I used to love that song.
Well, this is not Move Closer, this is Move Over.
Oh, sorry.
Move Over.
And then there's another song called Bouge de là by a French rapper, which means move here or move there, I think.
Yeah.
I'm clever that way, Sharon. I'm trying to compete with you on a daily basis.
You know this way we use another, right? So the other day, the regular taxi driver sent me SMS after I got to work. And also, by the way, I'm Sharad Kutin, and you're listening to Kusu Chuan.
Kutin Morgan. Yeah. Kutin Morgan.
And so Jennifer sends me a message, and she says,
"Is this really SMS or WhatsApp?"
Because WhatsApp. And she says to me, "Did you leave your watch in the car?" And I said, in the taxi, I said, "No, I didn't." And then she said, "Oh, it must have been another woman passenger." Mm. So I said, "But the way she used it, that makes me a woman too, isn't it? When you use the word another woman passenger."
Oh, that's a malapropism, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's a malapropism. It's just
it must be a malapropism.
Malapropism is like an inappropriate word. Yeah, I guess maybe that's... Yeah, I don't know if it can't...
So
as a man,
at this
I'm
point
not
in
linguist.
Time, we must explain what malapropism...
Yeah.
In my book, I think that's just an incorrect usage of the English language.
Okay. Of a word. Of a word. Okay. So, two corrections from what we were talking about earlier. So, it's Justin Trudeau is the son of Pierre Trudeau.
Justin.
No,
because French, right? You must say Justin.
No, I don't think so. We can call Keith Carmen, our local Francophile.
He's actually the local Bahasa file as well.
Justine, maybe, would be
Justine,
the...
Justine, which is obviously unfortunate from a pronunciation perspective.
I don't know, actually. Also, Palmyra is in Syria, not in Iraq.
I told you.
Well, no, you didn't. You just claimed that you had no idea what these things were.
The only thing I knew about Palmyra was that it's a condo in Bangsa. That's what I thought.
Yeah, and not in Syria. This is a historic ruins that were attacked by ISIL. ISIL is very interesting because there's a lot of cultural politics around this. You know, whether you're destroying the Bamiyan Buddhas or you're destroying something like the Palmyra ruins, the idea is to wipe out history. And for a death cult that ISIS is, you can see why you want to obliterate history, because history complicates things.
Yeah, and conflicts with your worldview. But it's quite early in the morning to be talking about death.
I know. Let's talk about flirting instead.
Yeah, because.
So
the question on the mantelpiece, if you like, is postulated by the Independent. And
the mantelpiece that holds the picture of your wife and kids.
Correct. No, sorry. So is flirting cheating, right?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question.
It's an extremely loaded question because I studied law, right? And in law, when you commit a crime, and it's a crime, it's a criminal case, yeah? There are two parts to the crime. One is the mental aspect, which is the mens rea. And then this actual act of doing, which is the actus reus. So in this case, you've committed half the crime by thinking, oh, hang on, she's cute, should I go and talk to her? And then that's half the crime gone. Do you know what I mean? So... But the thing is, you haven't actually done anything wrong in the sense that you haven't done anything wrong.
Well, the question is whether talking itself is an act. You're thinking that only if you transgress...
So the act of thinking that she's cute is actually part of the
crime. Yeah, and the act of speaking, because flirtation is about speaking, and speaking also is an action. You're thinking that if you don't act on the speech, meaning you don't actually try to have relations with the other person, and that's the only act that counts. But actually speaking is also an act. And so when partners are jealous or offended by the flirtatious behavior of their partners, you know, some people say, oh, they're overreacting. After all, nothing happened.
Yeah.
But others will say, well, what happened was a lot of talk. Yeah. And talk is important. And
so
talk
then
is
what
powerful.
Amounts to flirting as well? Because I might think that person's attractive, but I might think she's attractive because of her brain, of her personality, of her, perhaps of her charisma or sense of humor. So am I going to talk to that person? And I might be extremely, interested in talking to her because she's got such an interesting personality.
But
flirting?
Well, I don't know. I'm not in a relationship anymore, and this is not a signal for.
But you have been, right?
But this is it.
So
right?
Would you get offended, or would you think that's always?
No, I'm not.
Wrong,
I'm not.
You know?
I'm not given to jealousy. Not really. Well,
not really.
Okay, let's. If we were trying to be honest this morning, I think maybe honesty is not the best policy when it comes to speaking on radio about relationships. But let's just put it this way. When you take your vows, Chuang, did it include not finding other people attractive? I mean, how do people negotiate a world where there are all these possibilities and they have to say, well, no, I'm committed to one person, no other?
You see the thing, Sharad, marriage is a human construct. Human beings are animals, and animals are not meant to be monogamous. And if you look, if you analyze the animal world, there is no one animal in this world which is monogamous.
No, that's not true. Actually, wolves are monogamous. They are animals that mate for life. And so that argument is
now in ruins.
My only point of reference is the
African savannah, you see. And
you're
lion.
Just making this up. people who make arguments with reference to the animal world, I put this in quotes because part of the animal.
So you mean, well, wolves only have one girlfriend, one boyfriend, is it?
Yeah,
are you saying?
They mate for life.
No kidding.
Yeah, and there are many other animals that mate for life.
Hence
and I'm going to Google this right now. Animals that
hence
mate.
Hence the term lone wolf, is it?
No, that's actually probably a stereotype produced by human societies about wolves that they were terrified. You know,
in general, Sharad.
While you're just making things up, I'm going to actually pull out. Well, many, they're actually the grey wolf mates for life, the sandhill crane, the macaroni penguin. But because we were called a macaroni penguin, you would only mate for life.
The Google is your best friend.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, my point,
gibbon, the black vulture, the pot-bellied seahorse.
The only animal of note which I take a point of reference from is the lion. Because I like lions that way, and they are far from monogamous, right?
So you move from one argument to justify your actions to another argument.
That's what lawyers do all the time. Okay, they just take one.
This is why you're not a lawyer.
And then they come back.
Okay, so I just listed the number of animals. But coming back to human society,
right.
And the social contract that you make with your wife.
I ask you a question.
Partner.
You like art. I know that for a fact. Full stop, right? If you have a Van Gogh on your mantelpiece, and I say to you, hey, Sharad, let's go to the gallery. I would like to show you a bunch of Cezannes. And you come and you say, oh, Lord, isn't that nice? I love the Cezanne. But I've got a Van Gogh at home. Does that preclude you from liking the Cezanne?
No, but you know, there's not a relationship. I didn't enter into a relationship with another sentient being and say at the altar that I would love you exclusively for life. I mean, if you make that commitment to monogamy, then the question, what constitutes transgression of that?
That's the theory part.
Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, somebody who might know and could in fact pronounce the word Justin Trudeau.
It's a man called Keith Calm.
Yeah, and he's poised at the mic for the first bulletin of the day, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run, and that was Rock and Roll is King by the Electric Light Orchestra.
ELO.
ELO, again.
Yes, I love ELO.
Again,
they're amazing.
Again. Not this song. Not this song again.
This song particularly I like.
ELO again, because we keep to have, and I like that. I like the feel This is not
you like
what
the
70s
I think. Tinge, do you?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's Last Train to London, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
For you and me. That is Khoo Soo Chong. I'm Sharad Kutin. And you're listening to, as I said earlier, The Morning Run. It's 40 minutes past 6, 20 minutes to 7. And the morning is unfolding before our very eyes.
The sun doth rise before our very eyes.
Okay. So we were talking about flirting. And,
we were, Sharad.
And sometimes, and because that's related to the question of the longevity of a relationship.
Tis.
Because transgressions can, especially if women are empowered, and if the transgressor is male, because of course women can transgress as well, can lead to breakup. So the longevity of the relationship sometimes is of concern to people, sometimes it isn't. And there's apparently a test that you can do.
Really?
And it's called, yeah.
Do you let your fingers do the walking?
And we're going to tweet out the link to this, a test that predicts if your relationship will last.
This comes from Indy 500, doesn't it? Because
it does.
They love doing these kind of things.
Yeah, and I don't know how scientific it is.
Like, it's all driven by ads and views and page impressions.
And, you know, like, you know, Steven Spielberg.
Spielberg. Spiel is when you try and sell something to your boss.
Yeah, when you have a little line and you have like a whole little narrative.
Yeah,
okay, so Steven Spielberg and Hollywood know that you have buttons and they push those buttons, you know, make you cry, make you laugh.
Some more
whatever.
Than others.
And, you know, and magazines have clickbait or online magazines have clickbait. Titles and headlines that make you want to read them. Because in some sense, it's kind of fun. I mean, it's not like going to, you know, somebody with a crystal ball or a soothsayer or somebody with cards or tarot cards or, you know. Have you ever been to these roadside fortune tellers with the parrots that
you
come
know,
and they pick up the card?
You know, a few years ago, in fact, this the early 2000s, a guy called Tiziano Terzani, he wrote a book called The Fortune Teller Told Me. And I think that was in 2002.
Ooh, that made you sound very, very intellectual, Chuang.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So I do read from time to time.
Time you
Jerry
do, yeah. Taziano.
You know, your
book. Okay, Italian. Okay.
So that particular book made me go and I went on a massive fortune teller binge. I went from, and I even traveled outstation, Jay. That's another word, which is outstation, it seems.
You crossed the bridge from Penang Island to Butterworth.
No, I was really in KL by then, you see.
Oh, see.
So,
okay. You went outstation.
Outstation. So,
look for fortune tellers. Okay, tell us more.
So, yeah. So, I went on a huge fortune teller binge. I think I saw 8 fortune tellers in 1 year. And I just went berserk. And you know what, right?
Was it because of some anxiety about the future?
Because, yes, I was. I just broken up with my girlfriend. I was, you know, soul searching, that kind of thing. Single, you know, a bit wanderlusting, mainly lusting. And
remember, this is a family radio
show. It is. So what did I do? So the most prescient statement came from this guy in, I think it was Lot 10 or you know, one of those malls. And he actually said that I would be on air one day. And I was like, are you kidding? Forget it, right?
He mentioned radio.
Well, he said that you've been involved in a job which electricity or power or something, you know, radio waves. I think he actually mentioned radio because I made notes. I actually wrote down all the things that they say.
So he was the most accurate in terms of what actually
ways,
unfolded
yeah.
for your
in
life.
In some ways, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of this, but I, you know, I'm surrounded by people who I love and respect who are, and so I don't dismiss it out of hand.
There are things that we don't know, Sharad.
Yeah, that's true.
Of that, I'm convinced.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, yeah. Clearly, I mean, you didn't know anything about Palmera,
no,
the historic ruins.
No.
So that's
I only
clear.
Drive past the condominium. Once in a while.
Okay, that joke's been, you know.
Sorry, 4 times.
Yeah, 4 times. But yeah, coming back to, I mean, I don't know how many of us take these soothsayers that, you know, very seriously. I mean, they're governments.
So soothsayers is another word for fortune teller. Like.
Yeah. You know, I mean, somebody, there are governments in the world. And I remember, you know, stories about Ne Win, who was
world
the
leaders
general.
Who consult soothsayers yeah, before they introduce policy.
Absolutely. And some people who take the advice of soothsayers and create policy.
Above and beyond.
You know, Myanmar
advisors.
Used to denominate its currency like in nines.
Apparently, and this is true.
Because of some soothsayer?
This is a true story.
So
I want to do an overland trip to Burma, okay, Myanmar. And apparently because, they used to drive on the left-hand side of the road. And apparently some advisor told the prime minister at the time that it's actually more fortuitous for the country to be on the right side. So he changed all the cars to drive on the right side of the road,
yeah.
Even though they were right-hand drive.
And, you know,
which is
because
you can't overtake safely then.
Well, you know.
This is a true story because I did my research.
Well, you know, there used to be a British colony. And I think some of it is also resentment against the former colonial powers. And so, you know, kind of doing things differently was part of the kind of cultural makeup.
Today.
Yeah. Well, Duterte is much more. Much more part of a discourse that's been longstanding in the Philippines about its relationship to its former colonial power.
Because
the
USA. We talk a lot about Duterte, right? I actually asked one of my, because my kids go to music school, and this particular music school has got Filipino music teachers, and they're very, very talented, but they're also quite clued in. So I asked them about Rodrigo Duterte, and do you know what? Right, he said that we've been under the colonial. American colonial masters for so long that there's an undercurrent of rebelliousness. And it was exactly as you said. It was exactly as
mentioned. So, I think Duterte was slightly different. And the other thing about Myanmar or Burma, as it were is that the duration of colonialism was very short, right? Because they kind of lost their sovereignty only very late in the 19th century. Another amazing book, Chuang, if you have time
to read. Books to read. I don't have time to read.
You might have read this. Amitav Ghosh's The Glass Palace. Have you read that? This
no,
is a book.
I've heard of him, though.
Yeah, you must take this book with you. If you go to Myanmar on
Can you email me these titles?
I will
forget. Yeah. And I can't even pronounce the names.
Yeah, but Amitav Ghosh.
Ghosh. SN, right?
G-H-O-S-H. Ghosh.
Ah, Ghosh, okay.
Yeah, Amitav Ghosh, The Glass Palace. He's written some other amazing books in an antique land and such. But anyway.
Books that are too intelligent, I can't finish. Because I started Arundhati Roy's, I think The God of Small Things, and I didn't get past 75.
Yeah. The Glass Palace does is it connects Burma to Malaya. That's also there's a Malayan.
I think we've got quite a lot of connection,
Absolutely. You know about the Tiger Balm Gardens in Singapore?
The Tiger Balm?
The Tiger Balm. You know the
Tiger
The family
The Tiger Balm, la.
Yeah, the Tiger Balm, the ointment.
Yep.
They're actually correct. A Burmese family. A shipping line that went between Rangoon and Penang. Very strong connections between Burma and Penang. And so,
but Burma is actually one of the top three places I'm going to visit in the very, very near
future. It's gorgeous. If you go to something like Bagan,
I
went there, years ago. Of course, they recently hit by by an earthquake.
Yeah.
But it is extraordinary. Really, thousands of temples.
Like a 2 kilometer radius.
Yeah, and some of them dating back to the 11th century. Or older, and one of the biggest complexes called the Ananda Complex. It's built in the 11th century, before the Battle of Hastings.
Taken your advice on Rajasthan. I'm going to go and see Bagan one of these days.
I'm so glad you take my advice. But read those books. I think those
email
books
me, okay?
Okay, so there's this test, and I note your skepticism when it comes to these kinds of psychometric tests with regard to...
Yeah, because they're not really exactly German scientifically
But what if
based.
if you were confronted with a friend who was having this problem with a relationship, what is your advice generally to people if they want to hold on to their relationship?
Think of the repercussions.
Think of the repercussions. That's right. The consequences of your actions, right?
They're huge.
Yeah. I mean, there's also this other level of, I think that often doesn't get explored. We don't think of ourselves as animals, but some animals, when they mate for life, it actually changes their brain physiology.
Really?
Yeah.
You did all this research in the last 10 minutes?
It's the male prairie vole. And they're kind of a rat. Look at the edges. It's a rat. Apparently, their brains change when they mate for life. Yeah, when they mate.
Well, I know that when people get together and they're married, it kind of like changes. Well, definitely, especially when they have children, changes their lifestyle, changes their mentality, changes their outlook and everything.
I think for human beings,
it happened to me. Yeah. If it happened to me, it can happen to anybody.
Being the lowest common denominator type of guy. But
you had to stick it in, that's true.
But children change. Change everything.
Absolutely.
Often in a good way because...
And I'll tell you what, right? To take it another level, if you're a guy, and we are both guys, if you have a daughter, you will think 17 times about philandering. I'm serious.
And why is that?
Because, because she's a girl.
But how's your daughter implicated in your philandering?
Well, you don't, because you just think to yourself, your daughter will eventually grow up to be a girl, and you don't want to have. Do you know what I mean? So it's very complex.
Yeah,
I
think children also are often traumatized, and they model themselves on their parents.
Absolutely.
So if you are a philanderer, maybe it might encourage your children to think that way, whether they're boys or girls.
That's why the repercussions are humongous.
So their ability to make commitments and such will be affected. excited. Yes. Well, exciting stuff on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
We're coming up to the news at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. But first, here's a Summer Romance by Incubus. How appropriate. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.